Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Well, the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun as it relates to you having a happier, healthy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to welcome you to the show, and I appreciate you for taking your time to listen, share it with your friends and family. You know what? We're getting tons of downloads because people are going to the savingwithsteve.us website and download the old episodes where they can get some great information, you know, behind the scenes stuff, as well as some guests, gifts, books, downloads, the whole shot. So today, you know what? It's going to be really interesting. You know what? We're into financial literacy month, okay? The survey says 73% of teens crave more financial education. In fact, 3/4 of the kids don't feel confident or knowledgeable about personal finance. Later on in the show, we have Greenlight, and its CEO, Tim Sheehan, are looking to change the way by shining a light on the world of money for kids and parents. Now, we'll also be talking about how to spring clean your finances, but right now, isn't that real estate market nuts? It's just going crazy. We seem home prices go up. People are actually paying more than the asking prices. You know what? We have Jonathan Giroux of Synergy Loan Lending here to walk us through what's happening with real estate, what's going on with loans, what's next for real estate, and what it all means to you. So, Jonathan, I hope you don't mind me calling you JJ. We good with that?
We're good.
Welcome to the show. You know what? I know you've done local, national news, and now, you know what? We're actually international. You know, I just would love for our viewers to understand why you do all this.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I've been doing this over 20 years. And for me, it's not really about the doing of the loan part or you know, giving somebody financing to buy a home or refinancing a home. It really is just about the education. I mean, for me, the why is always about educating people. And the reality is you know, it kind of is based on your next guest as well. There's not enough education in finance from a younger age where people understand the why behind doing a mortgage or buying a home. And so the more education I can provide for people, whether I do their loan or somebody else does their loan, it really is just about giving them the knowledge so they understand the process, the why behind a loan, what it means for them. Because the reality is it's going to be their biggest liability on their balance sheet. So the more I can educate, the better it is. For me, the doing a loan or helping somebody with finance is really just the byproduct of the education.
That's wonderful. I'm glad you're there. And I'm glad you're doing that. So let's just get started with this crazy housing prices, the housing market itself. You know, I'd just love for you to give our listeners and viewers an idea why housing prices continue to surge. I mean, my neighbor, it was funny because when we looked at his house on Zillow when he first put it on the market, hey, it was a little over $850,000. Okay, great, great. He put it on the market for $975,000, so kicks and giggles. That's what it was on contract for. The next thing we saw it on Zillow is contract for $975,000. And it sold for $1.111 million. And you know what? He had 15 people, 7 offers. It all happened in less than 3 days. Crazy. Yeah. So you know what? Help us understand what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, going back to college and taking an economics class right now, it truly is about supply and demand. We do not have enough supply. We have a ton of demand. COVID, the COVID pandemic has opened up another situation where people can work from a lot of different places. And I think that's kind of maybe moving towards the future. People aren't going to be stuck in an office. And so like in Southern California, where I am here, people are moving from Northern California, where home prices are 50% higher there for what you can get down here. And we think our home prices are expensive. People from Northern California come down from the tech world up there, and where they're getting a teardown for $2 million, they're getting a steal for $1 million and $1.5 million, and they're happy to pay it. So until we get more supply, and I'll tell you, it's not just here in California, it is across the country.
Yep.
And one of the problems with supply is if I'm a homeowner and I've gained equity, which is great. Let's say I bought my house for $400,000 4 years ago, and I'm now kind of outgrowing that home, but my income hasn't followed the same suit. Where am I going to go as a seller? I'm going to sell my home, but where am I going to go to get more? I'm selling my home now for $900,000, but I need more space. Now, that house at $900,000, I need to spend $1.2, $1.3 million to get the more space, and maybe I just can't afford it. So people are adding on to their homes, they're renovating their home, they're adding, putting more square footage because it's a cheaper alternative than selling. And so until we get more supply, which I just don't see happening anytime soon, I'm afraid, well, I mean, I guess it depends what end you're on, but I am afraid that this sort of housing shortage is going to continue and the prices are going to continue to surge.
Wow. So you know what? I'm just going to add this in there for sake of conversation, but you know what? We were starting to hear buzz about, hey, look, everybody's getting their vaccinations. People are going to be going back to work. In fact, when we look on the roads, we're seeing more and more people on the roads, which is kind of a bummer. But you know, especially when you're dealing with Southern California traffic, that's no fun. But what that also means is things like the moratoriums on evictions and foreclosures are going to start going away. Now, the question I have is, how is that going to affect the real estate market? I mean, obviously, there's not a lot of housing supply, so they can't really build a lot of homes. But, you know, how is that affect? Is that a reality? Is it something people should be concerned about, especially with housing prices? Or is it something that's kind of a non-issue because they'll probably continue that moratorium for quarters to come?
Well, I'll give you my opinion on it and whether it's right or wrong. I certainly don't have a crystal ball. I mean, obviously, we know tons of people lost their jobs. Tons of people couldn't make mortgage payments. Tons of people went into a forbearance situation. And I know personally some people that are just getting out of that forbearance, just starting the process to get out of it. So the question really becomes, what are the banks going to do? Do banks want to take properties back? And in some ways, when you look at it with the equity positions on a lot of these homes, it would certainly make sense for banks to take them back. So let's say option one is banks take the homes back. They really don't need to flood the market with foreclosure homes or let's say fire sales, because the banks have become much smarter. And even at the end of our last sort of, let's say, housing crisis, the banks started bulk selling homes to investors that would take 1,000 homes off their balance sheet across the country at a pretty good, at a good rate for them. I could see that happening where we're not really seeing the onesies, twosies, 50 homes flooding the market. I just don't see that happening. I think, number one, the banks, with the help of the government or with the force of the government saying, hey, banks, you need to do workout programs. So I think we'll see some loan modifications happening, some workouts happening. People will start to go back to work. Their incomes will start to flow again, where they can show the bank, hey, I can make this type of payment. And these deferred balances on their mortgages will get added to the back of the loan. Mm-hmm. They'll put them in a mortgage that will be modified with a payment they can afford and keep people in homes. I just don't see the flood happening with the foreclosures.
Yeah. No, I think that's great, because if you think about it economically, if you have 8% of the houses that are upside down right now in the marketplace go foreclosure, we could potentially see another 2000, a housing crisis issue, a bigger one. And the banks need to be smarter, because that could end up dealing with their financial stability too. So yeah, and it does make sense, especially if the housing prices are continuing to rise, where they just, piecemeal out those houses from time to time, because then they can get a good deal. And the same token, the person who's in foreclosure, they're almost better off selling the house to an as-is buyer because they at least walk away with some equity. So
definitely. I think you hit the nail on the head right there, Steve. I mean, there's so much equity that's been built up in the last few years, even in the last year. And I mean, I think that really the only people that are not going to have that sort of equity position would be folks that just put, you know, it, maybe they were a veteran using a VA loan where they didn't use a down payment or maybe an FHA loan or you know, first time home buyer program where they just didn't start with enough equity and there is a cost of sale. Mm-hmm. But I think even there, you could probably do a break even pretty easily with an equity position, even in the last 12, 24 months. So as a seller, if you're in, or a homeowner, if you're in that sort of troubled zone, you really need to look at what does it look like just to sell the home instead of kind of go through that repossession process or foreclosure process.
Yeah, especially on your credit report. So, you know, I totally get that. Hey, look, stick right there. We're going to take a little break. We're going to be right back. Okie dokie. This is the Saving with Steve show. We're going to have more with Jonathan DeRoats here talking about this crazy real estate market.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientist at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, and low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in just 5 days, another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free, and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show. We're here with Jonathan DeRoats. We're talking about this crazy real estate market. We were just talking about the high prices. Hey, what about the foreclosures? What are the banks going to do? That whole cycle. And it sounds like, you know what? It looks like housing prices will probably continue to rise or at least stay stable, which is kind of nice. Now, the next thing is interest rates, okay? Mortgage rates. Man, I'm seeing these ads out there for a 15-year for 1.85%. And I understand you got to be like the perfect client to get that. But let's talk about what's going on with, you know, interest rates when it comes to mortgages. What does that mean for buyers? Are they moving up? What do you expect them to see going forward in the future?
Well, you know, that is the crystal ball question. And I love answering it because we just don't know. But what we do know is what's happened this year so far. So we got through the election. We got a new administration. Right away, there was concerns in the bond markets. And when I talk about bond markets, there's two different types of bonds that kind of fuel long-term interest rates. One is the U.S. Treasury market, which are treasury bonds. And typically, historically, I should say, people will look at long-term bonds, 10-year treasuries, 30-year treasuries, and see what's happening with that. When people invest in those bonds, the yields or the amount people will make when people are investing goes down. Typically, long-term mortgage rates will follow suit and go down. When people unwind their positions or sell their positions in the bond markets, interest rates will go up and it follows the yields. Yeah. The other thing that fuels is mortgage-backed security bonds. People invest in mortgage-backed securities and at different price points. And when I mean price points, I'm talking about interest rate levels. So there's 3% bonds, 3.25% bonds, 3.5% bonds. And so there's institutional investors as well as our government that invest in these. Now, when the new administration took over, people were very concerned with inflation, very concerned with bond prices going up. And there was some short selling in the bond markets. We've heard about this with some stocks out there, some company stocks that went crazy with large institutions short selling those stocks. And it's something called a short squeeze. And so people keep selling, people keep selling. And basically it pushed the yields of our bond markets higher very, very quickly. And we lost about 0.5% in mortgage rate to the higher side. So 2.5% rate went to 3% rate in a few weeks timeframe. Mm-hmm. And it's taken a little bit of time. It's taken a little bit of the government coming out and the Federal Reserve to come out and say, hey, we're watching the economics, we're watching the economy, we're watching inflation, but we're not increasing interest rates anytime soon. We're going to continue to buy bonds at a pretty high click. And what I mean by that is our Federal Reserve is buying mortgage-backed securities and treasuries every month, billions and billions of dollars. So they have sort of helped stop the bleeding a little bit on the mortgage rates. And we've gained a lot of ground back. So let's say we've gained about half of the ground back that we lost. So we're in a nice even playing field right now. Mm-hmm. If somebody's looking to refinance and they kind of missed the boat before, probably a good time to jump in it right now. If somebody's looking to buy and they're thinking about locking in an interest rate, it's probably a pretty good time right now because we're at this kind of level playing field. The fear is that, as we talked about before the break, the economy is kind of getting going. People are going back to work. People are spending money. People are on the road. You know, you just look at that traffic. So people are out there, and as the economy gets stimulated, as people are spending money, the Federal Reserve is going to be looking at this and saying, hey, things are going pretty good here. We don't need to buy as many bonds. And that's going to push interest rates higher. Now, when that is kind of the kicker. It could be a month. It could be a couple months. We have to pay close attention to that, because right now the Federal Reserve is like the only bond buyer in the market, which is a little bit scary. We don't have big institutions buying bonds. Now I think that they're going to put a stopgap. I think we have a government that's spending a lot of free money. Well, not free money, but money that somebody's going to have to pay for. You and I will be paying for it, Steve, and our kids down the road.
I know.
That's what we have to be careful of. The bigger question is, if interest rates go higher, what is that going to do to home prices? And I'll tell you, interest rates are still so low, Steve, and money is so affordable still. I think interest rates would have to go a percent and a half higher before it has an adverse effect on home prices. Mm-hmm. So that's my opinion on that.
Okay. So you know what? We've talked about what's next for real estate. We've talked about what's next for interest rates. So let's talk a little bit about what are the different programs that are available out there for people. We have about 5 minutes left. Obviously, if you're working somewhere, you get a W-2, all that kind of stuff. What's the best way to prepare to get a mortgage or to refinance? And then I'd like to talk to you about, if you're self-employed and you just had, half of 2020 wasn't so good because of the pandemic, and then your business started getting going, how do you go about getting a mortgage if you're in that type of situation, or even refinance if you're in that type of situation?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, from a paperwork perspective, W-2 to employee, if you work for a company, just get your paperwork together. W-2s, pay stubs, last couple months bank statements, and your last 2 years taxes. And your mortgage statement and homeowners insurance, property tax. Technology is definitely being used a lot in the mortgage world. So it makes it a lot easier for people to kind of move this paperwork through the system. The bigger thing that, for the self-employed, for the business owners. And when I mean business owners, if you run your own construction company and you just file your taxes and you have something called Schedule C as a sole proprietor, Schedule C income, this is where the preparation becomes a little bit more and a little bit harder, where if you haven't filed your 2020 taxes yet, banks are going to require you to do a profit and loss statement for the year 2020. And into 2021. And that profit and loss statement is going to help you. But do be prepared with the last 3 months of your business bank account as well. Because what we're comparing is, let's say 2019 to your profit and loss statement for 2020 to your 2021 bank statements to see how much money is kind of flowing in and does it all jive? Are you back to work? So that's the kind of paperwork that you need to prepare on that end. And I would do that on the front end. A lot of people, what I find, they don't know what a profit and loss statement is. We kind of need to help guide them through that, which is fine. And then let's say you had a really bad year in 2020 and your taxes just don't look good. You're self-employed, you own a business, a corporation, you had some tough times, which a lot of people did. So it's really understandable. The one thing that's kind of come back to the marketplace that went away when the pandemic hit is bank statement loans. Lenders find it to be pretty low risk when somebody has a decent credit score and you own your own business, and we can show money flowing through your business. Maybe you don't claim all that income on taxes, but we can look at your bank statements and see, you know what, for the last 12 months, there's this much money flowing through the bank account. We're going to subtract out some expenses, but we're going to kind of use that, that income flowing in with some subtraction of expenses, and we're going to use that for income to qualify you. Now, the downside, if there's a negative side to it, is you're going to pay a little higher interest rate because it's a little risky loan for the bank, but it's not bad. I mean, we're not talking about 10%, you know, maybe you're going to be a percent or percent and a half higher on interest rate compared to a perfect scenario. But I always look at these loans as kind of a band-aid scenario, Steve, where we know you're not going to be in it forever. It might be a year or 2 years because your business is coming back in, and you know, 2021 taxes are going to look better and 2022 taxes are going to look better. And so it's really like, hey, I need to do something today. I want to buy a home today. I know my taxes don't look that great. How do I do it? And these sort of bank statement loans are the scenario that we'll look at for that.
I see. Okay. So that's good news for small business owners, self-employed, independent contractors. That's wonderful news to know that there's availability out there to get a good loan, or to be at least be able to get your foot in the door and be able to refinance later on down the road. Now, Jonathan, we just have about 45 seconds left. I'd like you to just let us know how people can get a hold of you. If they need help, they're looking to refinance. If they're a business owner, this might be the right time to do this. Whether it be refinance or refinance for a remodel. You know what, with rates this low, it might even make sense to take money out to pay off debts that have accumulated over the last year. So, you know what, could you just share the information with the folks and see if we can help them?
Definitely. Well, I'm here to educate anybody that needs questions answered. Very easy. You can go to askjjnow.com. Askjjnow.com. You can call me at 760-522-2298. Or you can text me at that same number, or you can email me simple things at jj@s1l.com.
Perfect. JJ, I want to thank you for being here today. Pearls of wisdom. Appreciate you educating the folks. Hope everything stays safe and healthy for you all. And hey, we'll look forward to having you back next time.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
Have a great day. We'll see you. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, that was Jonathan Giroux, just educating on anything and everything about real estate, mortgage rates. If you need his help, you want to make sure you reach out to him because he's one of the best educators out there. Now, we have a few moments. Stick with us. We're going to be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, I want to welcome you back. We just had Jonathan Giroux talk about that crazy world of real estate. He also talked about what's going on with mortgage rates and how that's going to stay low and what he thinks might happen with foreclosures. And you know what? That way the banks are going to stay involved. They're, you know what? It's going to be a wonderful situation all the way around. Now, let's just talk about spring cleaning your finances. All right. A long-term successful retirement plan is all about asset accumulation. In fact, it's a long-term asset accumulation event. If you want to have your dream retirement, you're going to have to take special care and do some careful planning, as well as be disciplined in the work that you do. So if you're spring cleaning your home, it's time to do the same for your finances. So we're going to talk about what to get rid of, what to plan for, what to automate, what to review, when to have the retirement, so you can have the retirement of your dreams. So let's just start right at the beginning. And all we're really looking to do here, the first step is clean out your old stuff. I mean, we've all bought stuff, clothes, the things that we've never used. And it moves from one closet to another closet to behind the couch, out to the garage. And you know what? Now you got a full garage. Okay. So one of the things that you could do is you look at all those things that you aren't using, old electronics, furniture, kids' stuff that they don't even have anymore. And you can look at doing one of three things. In fact, I would create three piles. The first pile is a sell pile. The second pile is a donate pile. And the third pile is that trash pile. Now, hey, you'd be surprised what people buy nowadays. In fact, they buy computers, phones, old cell phones, clothes, furniture, children's belongings, old trading cards, the whole shot. In fact, I would probably take a look at one of those at an antique dealer or a trading card dealer because they might be worth a lot of money. In fact, my son found out many of his Pokemon cards were worth anywhere from $30 to $100. You know why? Those Pokemon cards are almost 45 years old because they were handed to him. Now, he thought that was pretty cool. He actually sold them on eBay. You can sell stuff on Amazon, Craigslist, Etsy, Letgo, and many other places. Big thing here is all about recovering some of your initial costs. Now, whatever you don't sell, hey, you can always donate to a charitable organization. You can donate your clothes, your furniture, old electronics, nearly anything you can't sell, you can probably donate. And if they won't take it, then you put it in the trash. Now, keep in mind, if you're donating, that you're going to need to get a receipt so you can write off that donation on your taxes. Fair enough? Next thing, paperwork. Hey, y'all know I'm in my mid-50s. I got a few kids in college. I grew up in the paperwork era. I grew up stuffing stuff in a file cabinet. A couple of years ago, I decided to get rid of all that paper. Now, first of all, you're going to want to keep important certificates, such as your birth certificate, your marriage certificate, your passport. Some of those things you're going to want to put together and put it in a safe or a safety deposit box. Now, when it comes to tax documents and other documents that you want to save, purchase a scanner. Scan them all, put it on an external hard drive. That's what I did. And then I also put it on an external cloud server that's secure. Why? Because if the hard drive gets wet and gets destroyed, I still have it secure on an iCloud. Okay. So that way I take all those documents after I've got it all scanned and saved and shred them all. Why do I shred them? Because I want to avoid anybody stealing my identity or getting my information. And you should too. Next step, review your monthly budget. Hey, if you've never done this, it's an easy thing to do. Here's how. Get an Excel file. Get your last three debit card, credit card statements, mortgage statements, the whole shot. Here's what you do. You first start by, I always list by how much money I'm spending in gas, how much money I'm spending eating out, whether it's to buy incidental items at the store, going out for coffee, doing the eating out somewhere at a restaurant or drive-through. I make sure I tally all that up. Then it's food, then it's clothes, then it's the cable bill, then it's the cell phone bill, then it's the all the different little memberships, all the different little streaming services, all the different little utilities that I have, okay? The credit card payments, the auto payments, the mortgage payments. And you got to make sure you include those irregular items, such as your property taxes, your insurance bill that comes once a year. Hey, I'm going to a wedding this year. I'm traveling. Make sure those get added into your budget. Here's the next step. You want to look at things and get rid of stuff, okay? You want to get rid of stuff like old gym memberships that you don't use. I mean, some of you probably have been paying these for 2, 3, 4 years, but you just don't go. Get rid of it, okay? Box subscriptions, where they send you stuff every single month, but you don't use it. Those wine clubs, hey, the winery you went to was wonderful, but you've been paying to have the wine, but you haven't been to the winery in a year to get your wine. Go get your wine and cancel it out, okay? Landlines, food delivery services, all those different things. And you know what? If you bought one of those streaming services and you don't use it anymore, get rid of it. Speaking of streaming services, there's many people who have cable and the cable packages. I used to, we were paying $272 a month on that stuff. And then what we did is we eliminated all the services, kept the internet services, and added in AT&T Live. You can add Hulu Live if you want. And then we added a few apps. We saved ourselves $100 a month. Did the same thing on the cell bill. There's like 4 big carriers. You know what? There's a number of subcarriers that are on the same network, which means you can pay half or 2/3 of the price you're paying before. And you know what? You're going to save yourself a bunch of money. We saved $80 a month as a family. You know what? When it comes to things like auto insurance, homeowners insurance, you can always shop around, see if you can get a better rate. Next, you want to look at anything and everything. So you get the idea here. Cut away stuff you're not using. One of the big things that we did is we looked at our food bill, okay? Just being real candid here. We looked at our food bill and realized all the prepackaged food we're buying. We went back to making our own salads. It saved us $20 a week. That's $80 a month. Can you believe that? My wife went back to Costco and bought a box of 100 Keurig cups, some creamer, and she went from paying $200 a month at Starbucks to $40 a month, another big savings. We refinanced our mortgage, saved another $500 or $600 a month there. So there's ways that you can reduce those expenses, but here's the big reason why you want to do it. Because you can redirect those expenses that you're not paying anymore to paying down your credit card debt, to funding your retirement, your savings, your emergency fund, that new house, that new car, the whole shop. So when we look at the next things, we're looking at setting some goals or checking the progress for your financial goals for the year. Hey, you want to look and see if you're on track for your long-term financial goals. You know what? And that financial goal should be financial independence, so you no longer have to work anymore. If you don't have an emergency fund, hey, let's figure out a way to get an emergency fund. And how much are we going to contribute to our finances, our savings? Okay, so what are we going to plan to contribute to our 401ks and IRAs? All right, so if it's $1,000 a month, you can simply automate this by going to your human resources department or to your local bank and say, I want $1,000 a month going from my account to my SEP IRA, my 401k, or whatever it is. Okay. Set up a consistent investment pattern. So if it's 5 mutual funds, have it go over the 5 mutual funds. So that means if it's $100, 20 is going to go to each mutual fund every single pay period. Fair enough. Next, you can automate other things such as saving for an emergency fund. You could save for travel. We like to, $200 or $300 a month. We go on a $4,000 or $5,000 trip every single year. It's covered. We don't have to worry about where we're going to get it from. That way it saves us from putting on a credit card and building up our debt. Second, hey, if you want to save for a house, automate the savings for a house. If you're saving $2,000 a month to get a house, do it. Okay. You want to set up ways to automate things so they go out of one account to another so you don't spend them mindlessly. This way you can grow assets, build things. Next, how to adjust your tax withholdings. This is crazy, but I see this all the time as a financial consultant. People come in, they say, oh, I'm getting a $4,000 or $5,000 refund. And I always say, let's think about this for a second. You paid $420 every single month more than you needed to the US government. Great, they held your money the whole year. You had to fill out a form, pay taxes on it. Here's the big thing. You paid them $5,000, but there's no interest. You know what? It might be more prudent or better if you were to reduce your or increase your withholdings. So at the end of the year, you're either paying $150 or getting $150 back. It's an additional $4,800 every single year that you can contribute to your emergency fund, your travel expense, saving for retirement, building up a fund to buy another home, the whole shot. Next, hey, let's look at reviewing our life insurance and health insurance policies, okay? Life changes, things get different. Make sure you're online with that. Review your asset allocation to make sure you're at the right risk potential. You don't want to be in a situation where you're just about to retire, where you don't have enough money to retire. Last but not least, you want to make sure you review your credit report. Get rid of those errors, file a statement with each one to get rid of those errors. Why? Because your credit number will go up. That means your interest rate you pay will go down, which means more money in your bank. Last and most importantly, you want to make sure you track the key metrics. I'm saving this month on a monthly basis. At the end of the year, make sure you meet your goal. It takes you 2 to 3 minutes on a monthly basis. Now, that's it for this week. I want to thank you for joining us. We've got Tim Sheehan with Greenlight next. We had Jonathan DeRoche talking about that crazy real estate market. Thank you. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, and low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in just 5 days. Another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free, and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the show. We just talked to Jonathan DeRoche about that crazy real estate market. We also talked about how to spring clean your finances. And now we've got something special. Now, I just want to say this out front. According to financial literacy, there was a survey that says 73% of teens crave more financial education. In fact, 3/4 of the kids don't feel confident and knowledgeable about personal finances. You know what? Greenlight and their CEO, Tim Sheehan, are looking to change that by shining a light on the world of money for kids and parents. Now, welcome to the show, Tim. You know what? I know Greenlight's all about educating kids and their parents about finances. I personally feel this is a very important thing. My kids went to private school, and one of the things that I would do is I'd go in there and get young kids. I'm talking, you know, the kids in 4th and 5th grade to understand money and understand that mom and dads aren't really just a bank you withdraw from all the time, and got them to do their own little budgets. And it was kind of funny when they get a little frustrated about not being able to do something fun because they didn't have the money. And they, you know what? Their parents appreciate it because it's kind of a reality check and they appreciated things more. So before we get going into all Greenlight and discussing more of the Financial Literacy Month survey, tell us a little bit why you went about starting Greenlight.
Yeah, it's for a lot of the reasons you just mentioned. Essentially, one thing we learned by talking to so many parents is that they not only have a need, you know, to be able to, you know, in certain circumstances, be able to kind of, you know, instantly give their kids money and allow them, you know, have some oversight of that. They also want them to grow up to be financially smart. And so when you dig into that a little bit, what they're saying is, or what they told us. And so hence, this is why we built what we built into Greenlight. But they want them to learn that money doesn't grow on trees. You have to earn it. You have to work for it. They want them to learn to save because unexpected things happen in life. And, you know, like the car has a problem and needs to be repaired. And maybe that's not part of your normal monthly budget. And so having some savings set aside, you can pay for those repairs without having to take on a lot of debt. So things like that. Also to learn how to spend wisely, right? Make trade-off decisions. Don't just always have to buy the thing that's right in front of you. You can save your money for something you really want, you know, later.
So you're saying teach the kids how to deal with impulse buying?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And then, you know, there's families that want to teach their kids to give back. So we also built that in with a built-in giving account. And then, of course, want them to learn to invest, because that's how you actually build to true wealth over the long term. Mm-hmm. And you want them to understand what credit is, because an excellent credit score can actually save you several thousand dollars on a mortgage or a car loan. So it's kind of all of these things that you want your kids to not only kind of be aware of, but you want them to actually learn them well enough that they start to form these really healthy financial habits. And so the Greenlight service is all about helping parents teach their kids in such a way that the kids, as they grow up, they're forming these healthy financial habits. And what happens is they take those habits with them into adulthood, and it has a profound effect in terms of, you know, avoiding credit card debt, having the savings account set up, getting your investing started early. Because as we all know, the earlier you start with investing, the better off you'll be at an earlier age. So it's all of those things kind of bundled together. But we tried to do it in a way where it's very easy to use, simple to understand, both for parents to use as well as kids.
Now, I'm just listening to you say that. I'm going, oh my gosh, I was looking at your website and your blogs, and there was a blog up there that just says, you know what, how much would you have to save on a monthly basis at the age of 16 at a 10% return to earn $1 million? So what's the answer?
did you guess at the answer?
You know what? I remember, see, back in the day, it was $157 a week at 5% would catch you $1 million in 30 years.
Yeah.
And the reason why I know that is because we have a friend that lived on our neighborhood, and he was a janitor and his wife was a cook, and they didn't make much money, but they saved everything. And just listening to me, he said, as long as I do this every single week, we're going to have this. In fact, they had a better retirement than a lot of people I know, because that money that they save actually was more like $3 million. But the reality is, you know what? They only made less than half of what my dad did. If that makes sense. So
that's right.
I'm just curious. I don't know what it is since the age of 16.
The stats you just cited are pretty strong right there. But yeah, I think it's a surprisingly low number. I mean, I think if you were to save $100, you know, you're compounding, especially if you're investing it, it just grows so fast that it's quite astounding. And I think basically the thing we want kids to learn is, one, it's not magic. You can really do this. You can learn how to invest. And so we've tried to include, you know, really premium content from Morningstar and other places to help the kids really learn how to research an ETF or research a stock and really start to build up their investment account, you know, really starting at as a child. And so just imagine, you know, what that account could look like when they're 40 or 50 or 60.
Oh, I totally agree. Now, you know what, parents, most of the time now you have two parents that are working. They're both working really, really hard. You know what? What can parents do? You know, more like, how can parents teach their kids about personal finance? What's, you know what? I know you do this all the time. Parents don't. But if you live this all the time, you probably know these things, but a lot of people don't. I'd love you to share that knowledge of what parents can do to help teach their kids about personal finance.
Yeah, it's essentially like the things you can do are, you know, if the kids are young, then you know, using chores and allowances can be a very powerful way to teach them that, you know, you work to earn money, and then the power of the allowance is they have to kind of live within a budget, essentially. So it's like, okay, you get, you know, $10 a week or whatever, you know, it happens to be. And it's like, okay, so you have to decide when are you going to spend that? Or are you going to save it so that over time you can save up enough for, you know, a new video game or a new bike or whatever it might be. and or in some cases save for a car, they're basically some very powerful concepts that can be learned with just those basic things of chores and, mm-hmm. and allowances. I think having some savings goals, very specific savings goals. So, you know, what is your child interested in? Is it, you know, are they of age where they're thinking about driving and having their own car? And so saving for a used car might be a realistic savings goal to have. Or are they really young and, you know, saving for a bike or the new game that they want? Having a very specific goal and saving money to achieve it, it might not sound like a big deal, but it actually is a really big deal for a kid to do that and learn it and see that it works. Like when you do that, it actually pays off and you get the thing and how great it feels when you've saved enough to actually make that purchase, especially if it's quite a big thing you're saving for that takes you quite a bit of time and discipline to get to that point to save. So I'm a big fan of savings goals and being very specific about for each kid, you know, what really is going to motivate them to save. And then we have built in this thing called parent paid interest, where the parents can have a little kicker that gives them a little bit of incentive to save. So like you can set your parent paid interest rate at, you know, 5%, 10%, 20%, you know, whatever it is you wanted to set it at, just as a way to incentivize the kids to save. Because really what you're doing is it's not so much about the amount of money they save, although that's great if they save a lot. Mm-hmm. What you're really trying to do is form the habits. You want them to form these habits. And so basically, if you can incentivize the kids to have the right financial behaviors without them even realizing it, it becomes the habit. And so, you basically are getting them to the end state you want them to be in, even though they may not really realize, you know, what's happening. And so I feel like that's a big benefit as well of as these different concepts, especially like saving and managing your money and living within your means, which I love the idea of the allowance.
Stay right there. We're going to go on a break real quick. Got to pay some bills. So, hey, ladies and gentlemen, hey, this is a wonderful talk with Tim Sheehan. He's talking about how parents can help their kids save, how they can be good financial stewards. We're going to be right back. Stick with us.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientist at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, and low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in just 5 days. Another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free, and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back. We're with Tim Sheehan at Greenlight. We're talking about how parents can help their kids become good stewards of money. Now, I personally want to thank everybody for listening in, sharing us with your friends and family. You know what? If you would like to get more information about the show or you know, listen to more financial tips, you can always go to savingwithsteve.us. If you'd like to get some guest gifts, behind the scenes stuff, you can always go to the Saving with Steve Sexton Facebook page. Now, we're back with Tim Sheehan. Tim, again, I want to thank you for being here. Now, we were talking about what things parents could do. And you know what? While you're talking, I was just remember this. First of all, you know what? I'm in my mid 50s. My first allowance was 25 cents. When you said 10 bucks, I was like, I wish I could have had that. But there was something interesting, you know what, that my wife did more so because I was working all the time with our kids. And she made it a habit from when they were very little is to get a savings account. Yeah. And you know what, when they got, you know, it didn't happen when I was young, it was just our five kids that we had our birthday party with. But, you know, when my kids grew up, it was just all the kids in the class and some gave money, some gave gift cards and all that stuff. And what they did is they took the money from the birthdays and they put it into the savings account. And then my wife taught them really well about how to go about shopping and finding the best deal. And I, you know what, my son's an engineer. He's probably gone a little overboard with it. And what I mean by that is he will look for 6 months until he has the perfect deal before he goes and gets something. We're at the point he goes, well, it's over here. I go, are you going to buy it? He goes, I'm not sure. Then we're not going. So what other things that parents can do to help educate their kids about personal finance, about being good stewards of their money?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, you know, we mentioned the chores tracking and allowances and savings account with the savings goals and parent paid interest. These are all tools that you get as part of the Greenlight service. There's the investing component where we actually have constructed this whole investing service that's targeted and meant for kids to learn how to invest. And so it's the first of its kind. There's nothing else out there like it. And it helps kids learn how to invest. And that's a very, very powerful concept as well, in addition to all of the other ones I mentioned.
You know what? To understand that is really important. So could you walk us through how that portion of Greenlight works?
Yeah. Yeah. So the with investing, I think it was Warren Buffett that said, you know, there's two key questions you have to answer with investing. The first one is essentially, you know, do you think this company is going to do really well over the long term in terms of earnings growth and sales growth and all of those things? And then the second question you want to answer is, can I buy a share of that company today for a fair price, essentially? And so it's two different decisions. One is essentially, is this a company or an ETF that you think is going to do really, really well over the long term? And then the second one is more about, is its share price kind of fairly priced right now, or is it too overvalued? And so that's kind of the information we've included in the Greenlight Investing Service is allowing the kids to actually do the research to learn about a company. You know, are their sales growing? What's their competition look like? All of these kinds of things. And then Morningstar fair value price, where they basically will tell you if the price of what the price right now is on the company, it's fair value price is how they refer to it. And so it's a way to tell, you know, is the company's share price like way high right now? So maybe now's not the best time to invest. Or maybe it's even lower than its fair value. And so it's actually a really good buy right now. And so that's the investing service has tons of information within it. But the way to think about investing, I love the simplicity of those two questions, you know, that you're trying to answer for each investment.
Oh, I think that's great, because far too many get so engrossed in all the data. And the reality is most times they don't know how to make the decision anyway. So if you can make it basic and simple, it makes it easy. So how are the parents involved with the son or the daughter that's learning how to invest? Obviously, the son or daughter's not pushing the button to buy, but how is that? How are the parents involved with that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So what's neat is the kids get to do all the research, and they propose the investment to the parent through Greenlight. And then the parent gets notified, and they can approve or decline the investment. Or they can ask more questions of the kid in terms of like, why, you know, why do you think this is a good investment? And then if they're satisfied, they can approve it. And then the investment will go through and, you know, they'll actually make that purchase. And if, you know, kids don't have a ton of money, so sometimes, you know, they might, it might may be a fractional share purchase. And so they'll get like a fraction of Amazon or a fraction of Apple or, you know, something like that. And so that works, but still they become a part owner in that company and they can start to like really think of, themselves as an investor. And, it's really neat because what Greenlight does is it kind of encourages these conversations that happen between parent and child. And what's neat about it is often the conversation is initiated by the child. They'll ask the parent, you know, hey, what's the difference? Like, I remember a frequent one we get is the kids, when they're using their debit card, the POS terminal will ask, you know, debit or credit. And, you know, they'll hit debit and they'll type in their debit PIN. But that's a common question for a child is, well, what's the difference between debit and credit? And so that can lead to quite a conversation between the parent and child. And, you know, other things like when they propose the investment idea to the parent can say, well, why do you think this company is going to do well? And the child can share their perspective on it, right? They can share what they've learned and why they think the company is going to do really well. And, you know, the parent can ask follow-up questions, you know, to kind of test their reasoning skills and their critical thinking skills. And it's really pretty powerful. I've done this with my own kids as well. And I have four kids, two boys, two girls, and they, it's really interesting. They'll surprise you with, I think sometimes, how much work they've done to kind of figure out, you know, whether they should make this purchase, or invest in this, particular company. And it's quite wonderful, actually.
You know, I actually agree with you. When my son, who's a senior in college right now, first made his first investment, it was his money. He had skin in the game. He was eating the cooking now.
That's right.
He had a vested interest to make sure this was going to work out, as opposed to it was mom and dad's money. And hey, spending on the soda or the games, right. You know, hey, this has got to grow.
That's right. And, that's right.
I'm making fun of that, but it's just really interesting to watch that.
Absolutely true.
Had a conversation afterwards, like, he's serious.
It's absolutely true. And the point you're making is a very powerful one, not just for investing, but even for spending. You know, one of the most powerful things about Greenlight is the kids, it's real money and it's their money. So it's not pretend, it's not play, and it's not mom and dad's money. If it's an allowance and they've earned it, you know, by doing some chores or doing some work, that's a very powerful thing. So now it's really funny. Now they're not so quick to spend it sometimes. You know, they're like, well, wait a second, you know, I just got this money. I'm not sure I want to spend it so quickly. And they start to question things like, well, you know, gosh, if I go buy that, that's going to use up all of my $10. You know, I'm not sure I want to do that. So it really does encourage the right kind of behaviors where they start to really think carefully about, do I really need to buy this? Or should I save it and, you know, use it later for something that I really, really want?
You know, I think that's wonderful. And I was just thinking back to my son, you know, as I said, my son's in college, but like, you know what? He has short hair, but when he doesn't get his hair cut by the college because it's $30, he'd rather come down to the Supercuts and pay $12 for it. And during the pandemic, my wife pulled out the shears and it was free. So he decided he's coming home to get his hair cut every 3 months and it's free. my wife's like, no more.
That's awesome.
It's just interesting how understanding how money works. And when you're using your own money, the effort and time you put in, especially when it's a child. And as long as you've taken the time to reinforce that behavior, they will have a lifelong of good financial management decisions, which is wonderful. Absolutely. And I can't thank you enough for what you're doing, because the education you provide, the habits, the understanding, and obviously there's probably some kids on your network that took money out of their accounts and it became painful because they didn't have anything else because they spent it on the wrong thing, which is a good thing. I think that's wonderful. And you know what? Love to support you any way that I can.
Thank you.
Last but not least, before we go, how can people get connected with Greenlight?
You can go to greenlightcard.com and you can sign up right there just in a couple minutes. Or you can go to the Apple App Store or the Google Play App Store and download the Greenlight app, and you can sign up in the app as well. So you can sign up on the website or in the app.
Tim, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it. You're doing a wonderful service. I think educating our kids, it has a lot more to do with their with creating a fruitful future. I think there'll be less homeless people. People will value jobs more because they will value what they have, and they'll if they have a good financial foundation, they'll be just making better decisions. So again, thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you.
Hey, we'll look forward to seeing you again. Have a wonderful day and stay healthy. Okay.
Awesome. Thanks, Steve.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Take care. Yeah. Bye-bye.
You know what? That was Tim Sheehan at Greenlight. You want to go to Greenlight. If you're a parent, you have kids, you want to go check that out, because one of the best gifts you can give is the gift of financial well-being and having somebody being able to personally be a good steward of their own money. So again, thank you all. You have a great day, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton.